The regular October meeting of the Cambria Community Services District Board of Directors will come to order. Please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance to our flag and country.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Let the record reflect that four directors are present. Director Elon Funky Ballou is absent. He's on a trip abroad and is unable to attend today. Is there a report from closed session? Report from closed session.
I'm sorry, I'm messing around over here.
We noticed.
We met last meeting in closed session, I believe, after the regularly scheduled meeting, and with the items listed on the agenda, there was no final actions taken and no reportable actions that are required by the Brown Act.
Thank you. Are there any additions, deletions to the agenda, or pulled consent calendar items?
I have a couple.
General Manager.
Item 7B, the minutes, all of them. None of them are ready.
You're deleting them?
Yeah, postponing them until the next meeting.
Okay.
And then item 7F, the resolution 61-2005, we're going to postpone that until next month as well. And may I also state for the record that Fire Chief Bob Putney is not available today to deliver a report, his report, and then Assistant Fire Chief is not available as well, so he won't be here to make an oral presentation. They're in training.
So there will be no report from the fire chief today.
Save the written one that you have in your packets.
Thank you. Any other additions or deletions to the agenda or pulled consent calendar items? Hearing none, the agenda stands as amended. There are no acknowledgments or presentations today. We'll now have our report from the Sheriff's Department. Commander Ben Hall is here from the Sheriff's Department today. Welcome, Commander.
Welcome. Good afternoon. I didn't come in with too many statistics today for you. I have reviewed the, you know, what is going on up in Cambria, and can tell you there's nothing terribly unusual going on. Cambria seems to be an area that, for the most part, is crimes of opportunity and a little bit of a transient type of situation where you may have someone come in, do a few crimes, and leave. But with that said, I'm here to meet the members of the community. Been assigned at the Los Osos Station there for about 2 weeks, 1 week on vacation. But I'm here to meet the people in this community and listen to what your concerns are. About myself for just a minute, because it's usually the question they ask me, and it'll save you a minute. I've been with the Sheriff's Department 30 years. Before this, I was at patrol headquarters, and before that, I ran the Oceano Station. A little bit different people, different communities down there, different activities. Got, like I said, 30 years into the department, been in Civil Division, detectives, patrol, that type of thing. So I'm here. I will try to get back at whenever you break for the meeting. So if anyone has any concerns they want to talk to me about, and or if you have any questions or the board has any questions at this time, I'm more than happy to answer them.
Thank you. We appreciate your attendance at the meetings, and we look forward to working with you. Are there any questions of Commander Hall? Thank you again. Appreciate
okay, thank
it very
you,
much.
Sir.
We'll now have an update on the Main Street Enhancement Project, the Main Street Lighting Project, and the Flood Control Project from county staff. Mr. Flynn?
This is Jim Lopes.
Sorry.
I should put my glasses on before I call your name out. Thank you.
I'm Jim Lopes from County Department of Planning and Building. I'd like to talk to you just briefly about the street lighting project and give you an update. I do have a handout distributed to you today to give you sort of a rundown of the process, in that we are working with the advisory council to select type of street light, and to get lighting patterns along the street that will provide some features that are highly desired. One, of course, is to provide safety for people walking on the sidewalks, but also the main intent is to protect the dark sky, the night sky in Cambria, and also to minimize haze that might occur from light bouncing off the ground and upward. So we have some design choices to make, and we are working with the Advisory Council to do that. Next Thursday night, November 3rd, there'll be a walkthrough of the project area starting on Bridge Street at the hostel on Bridge Street, and that walkthrough will be for the purpose of looking at existing conditions, where the light locations are in terms of where the infrastructure is located now, and to see what distance there is between lights and what kind of lighting would be needed to provide minimum levels of lighting. So after that, we hope to then have the Advisory Council give us a recommendation on a lighting plan that they desire and a type of light, and then we hope to come back to your board with the request for your commitment to maintain street lights. And for that, at the bottom of the handout, I do have just a brief listing of estimated costs of lights. And this is based on our lighting designer's estimate that with 45 lights, the maintenance cost would be approximately on average $50 a year each, or about $2,250 for 45 lights. Power use at the flat rate that PG&E charges, that $4.33 a month per light, that would total about $2,338 for 45 lights. So as you can see, the maintenance costs, operating maintenance, I should say, would be less than $5,000 at this point. Estimated costs, if you wish to purchase lights to have in advance of some accident and have one on hand, those lights probably will be less than $2,000. They'll probably be around $1,500 each. So that's where I'm able to report today about the progress of the street lighting project. I appreciate your attention. Be glad to answer any questions you have.
Any questions of Mr. Lopes?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Yes. Will these lights be on the whole hours of darkness, or will they go off at a certain time?
They can be set either way, but they usually stay on through the night. I'm not sure how long during the night. I think they can be set for certain hours.
Yes, Director Coben.
My question, Jim, was just about the number of 45. I've attended both the sessions of NCAC that you were there. In the first one, you said maybe probably not use all 45, but are you thinking now that you will, or is that still up?
Well, we're not certain because some lights in this plan and in the installation are relatively close and others are not. There might be opportunities to avoid using a particular location because of other existing lights in the vicinity, such as a cobra head light or something.
But it'll be close to that number.
I'm afraid so. In fact, okay. Our spacing is very wide. It's it's in most locations along Main Street, the locations are probably almost twice the distance that they would be in a typical downtown. And that was done purposely to try to provide some minimum level but not create a very urban appearance.
Yeah. Well, I must say that I enjoyed the presentation by your lighting representative and learned a lot. And I admire your patience and long effort with the group in trying to make everybody have their say and have their points made.
Thank you very much. As an amateur expert, I too appreciate having an expert with me at these presentations.
I have a couple of questions, Mr. Lopes. Refresh my memory. Who's paying the capital cost of the lights?
It's a Transportation Enhancement Act grant that is paying for the lights, and it's coming through Caltrans and Council of Governments.
And it's fully funded?
Yes.
So there's no local contribution required?
Well, actually, your district provided a match of $32,000 for that. The county will provide a small amount to supplement that to provide the required match that that the federal government has.
So the maximum that you will look to the district for is $32,000?
For the capital cost, yes, that's okay. True.
I'm sure we can get into a full-blown discussion of this when you come back with the...
That provides that lighting that gives people some measure of comfort.
On one side of the street or both?
Mostly on one side, the south side. On the north side, there are, I think, six or so lights that are at the pedestrian crossings that are now striped across the street. And those crossings are at the bulb outs. Those are meant to provide safe walking crossing locations for people who park on the north side now that that site has been fully improved for parking.
Okay. So you'll be coming back to us with a presentation of the entire program.
I sure hope so.
I take it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Mr. Chairman, I'm George Gibson. I'm a division manager with the Public Works Department. I'm here representing Mr. Flynn and Mr. Benedix. Both had conflicts today and could not attend the meeting. But in that, with that news, they did prepare
summaries of both projects, the Chamber project and the Buttonville project, in terms of some progress today. I have handouts for you and the board members and staff.
I think we turned this mic.
Sounds like it. Yeah. Is the mic working?
I hope so.
There we go.
There we go.
That's better.
The light was on.
Great.
In reviewing both the enhancement summaries and the flood control summaries, they are up to date as of yesterday. If you look at the very last bits of information on that page, it'll show you where we are. If you have any questions, I can try to address them, but I can say that both projects are moving forward. We have had some problems with trying to find a contractor to do the last bit of the enhancement project on the wall. The first attempt to have that work done immediately, the price was beyond what we thought was realistic, and we're going to approach that again. Hopefully that work will start in the spring. In terms of the flood control project, they are just finishing up the final bits of environmental and permitting work, and they expect to be under construction in the late spring of next year, and that project will run through the beginning of 2007. We had one question posed to us via correspondence, and that was on the pumping station. And the pressure line that was part of the original project, but because of accelerating costs and everything, have been eliminated from this particular phase. But we are working with FEMA. They have expressed a possibility of providing almost $2 million of additional funding to move those two phases of the project forward. But that is not part of the work that will be done next year.
Any questions, Director?
Yes, I'd like to ask. I have just seen this, and I'm. Question I have is that when this is completed, will there be a signal on Highway 1?
Yes, there will. Now, that is involved with the flood control project, just for your audience and refresher. The first phase of the flood control project will raise Highway 1 in the Cambria Drive area and south, and we will be putting a new water crossing underneath the highway. So when the creek actually overtops the levee at the Santa Rosa Creek Highway 1 bridge and floods the area downstream and adjacent to the Mid-State Bank property, rather than crossing Cambria Drive and coming into the West Village, it will have access back to Santa Rosa Creek and back out to the ocean. When that project is done and the highway is raised and Cambria Drive is raised, there will be a signal installed. In fact, that signal project is ready to go right now, but they are waiting for us.
Is there going to be a how high is that at the peak of the raised section on the highway?
It's not that much. It's less than 3 feet at the worst case.
Okay. I was concerned when this first came out that that would be impairing the line of sight for the the automobiles coming back and forth.
No, the plan was given to Caltrans. Line of sight, speed considerations, stopping distances, and everything were considered. And it's quite an improvement. It'll go quite a ways in both directions from Cambria Drive to make sure the transition is very smooth for the speed of the traffic.
I wonder if there would be a possibility that we could have at least a fair weather crossing underneath underneath the highway. With for the extension of the the crosstown trail.
At this particular time, the crosstown trail is still envisioned to go across the intersection with pedestrian buttons to stop traffic.
In Cambria Drive, is part of your project to continue the trail to the stoplight then?
The current plans call for additional fill to be placed in that area for the bike trail. Right now, we have been waiting for the district's engineer to provide us with the final plans and cost estimates and everything. We have a verbal agreement with the district that we will be building that with our project based on your plans and cost estimates.
So it'll be some kind of a pathway that both pedestrians and bicycles could use?
Yes.
And crushed rock or something like that?
Right.
Thank you. Maybe Bob knows more about it. But
any other questions?
I wanted to clarify the Sheffield Avenue area. Is that, you say that is now being funded by FEMA?
At this particular time, that is not part of the project. But with the additional $2 million that they're trying to get for us, that will be included in the next go-around, both the Sheffield and the pump station.
The reason I say that is an area which is very vulnerable to flooding, as
yes.
I'm sure you know.
What the original analysis showed was the what we call the bathtub effect of the West Village. It basically floods in its own water, and the water cannot escape. So one of the solutions is to remove any amount of water that might come into that bathtub. The Sheffield portion was a pressurized pipe, basically to collect water high on the hill, pass it through the West Village in a closed pipe, no openings, no inlets, no anything. The only outlet would be back beyond the highway, back in the creek. And that would take about 6 to 8% of the inflow out of the West Village. The pump station would take the remaining less than 10%, and the vast, vast majority of the water is the underpass in the phase we're doing right now. I believe it's close to 84% of the total flooding flow that comes into the West Village would be handled by that first phase improvement.
So there's no real date on the Sheffield part of the
project?
No,
there's not. There is one. You'll have to the program requires a local share. We put together an assessment district to come up with the county's local share for the flood control project. That is still part of the Highway 1 undercrossing. We do not have, at this particular time, a local share for the Sheffield and pump station project, and that's the next thing that we would have to do administratively.
Is there an engineer's estimate on the cost of the Sheffield portion of the project?
It's in the range of $400,000 to $500,000.
And how much is the local share?
It would be around 20%. It changes sometimes. Our local share on bridges just got up by 8%, so we went from 20%, 80%. Now it's up to 11 versus 89. So it changes as the government sets the rate.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you.
I was just going to make one comment about the segment
General
three, because I haven't had discussions with George Gibson. We've had some with Dean Benedicts. And I'll let Bob Gressens, our district engineer, chime in when he feels it's appropriate. We don't have funding set aside for that portion of segment three. We were thinking that the county project, and it sounds like maybe it does, has some sort of system in place to accommodate the pedestrians across Highway 1, because we don't have the funds to build that segment at this time. And while we believe and know that it might be affordable, I think we relied on the county as part of this project to be building this segment, since it is so small from Highway 1 to Main Street. So I just wanted to make sure that we're not in disagreement necessarily what Mr. Gibson's saying, but we're still in negotiations with regard to how it's going to get funded, or if we can bring back to you that we have the money to build that segment. Bob, did you have anything to add?
I just know that North Coast Engineering did the original design on the Crosstown Trail. I think there was a considerable time lag because of the fact that the segment 3 portion was being impacted by the design of the flood control project. So I know that North Coast has provided at least the design as they have it to the current level and to the county. So that was handed off. And really at this point, I understand we have no funding for segment 3 also. So I think it would help the district quite a bit if the county could handle that piece for us. We have been delayed approximately 8 to 10 years while we waited for the widening project and flood control to occur.
What's the material specification for that stretch of the crosstown trail? Is it cement or some other surface?
I think it could be either cement or asphalt. Right now the sidewalk is cement up to the corner of Main Street and Cambier Drive, so I would think from an aesthetic standpoint it would probably look better as cement from there to the crosswalk. On the opposite side of the highway it's asphalt. So
I'm sure the county would be magnanimous and handle that.
Yeah, by percentage, you know, compared to this.
Well, it's going to fully accommodate left-hand turn and right-hand turn traffic going onto the highway, and it's going to be full left-hand turn and right-hand turn plus the bike trail, and as wide as we can make it. I have the plans available if you'd like to see them.
But the bike trail is
going to be off the side.
Yeah, but that's still the one we're discussing, or is this an extra one?
There won't be any parking. There won't be any parking lanes in that short section, but there will be full as many feet of lanes that we can get in there for both the left-hand turn in both directions, northbound on the freeway and into the West Village left turn.
Yeah, but let me clarify. Is the bike path part of what you're going to do, or are you waiting for us to?
It's a combination. My understanding was we were going to do the work because we have extra fill,
right.
And the district was going to pay for whatever the bike trail, crosstown trail improvements would be. If there is no crosstown trail off a Class 1 trail, we would most likely make it wide enough to have a bike lane in both directions on the roadway. That the width would accommodate the lanes of traffic straight through, the turn lane, and bike lanes on either side. But right now we're working with the idea that it will be a Class 1 bikeway off the roadway.
Thank you.
Sounds like we have some further discussions
yes.
Coming up. Thank you very much. I have one request to speak on this item. Rick Hawley. Good afternoon, Rick.
Hello. Good afternoon to you, too. And my name is Richard Hawley. I'm a resident of Cambria. I just have a couple of comments on the street lighting. I'm really have a no-confidence vote with that whole project. I just have seen the what's gone on with the Main Street Enhancement Plan and how it's been changed twice already because it wasn't done in a manner that the community really wanted, and now we have nearly 50 street lights that might go in just because someone got a T grant, and perhaps that's not the best use of those type of funds, whereas I think that some lighting might be appropriate, and I'm not sure of what appropriate might be. I think that's an overkill, and with all due respect to Mr. Lopes and the county, I would differ with his opinion on lighting. The flood control project, just a couple of comments that I look forward to seeing that happen. That's a plan that Greenspace put forward with the original Mid-State Bank project back in 1989, and we recommended that whole scenario when it overtopped to go underneath Highway 1 at that time, and I think that's a great project. In terms of the crosstown trail, I just want to remind the district that the district had to pay additional money for that project because it was engineered incorrectly, and you had lots of water, and you had to expend extra money to re-engineer it on Windsor. And I just want to caution you that money's might be spent that you're not anticipating because of engineering issues. And
that's why we'd like to get the county to take it on.
Okay. And one other thought about the widening of Cambria Drive. There's a conservation easement on one side and district property on the other, and I just wonder what the right-of-way is that exists there, if it can really accommodate all of those additions and enhancements that the community needs, because there might be some conflict there with district giving up property or getting into the conservation easement issue on the Mid-State Bank side. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rick. With respect to the Main Street Lighting Program, I would encourage that you attend the CCSD meeting at which that project will be presented, and I'm sure there will be a lot of discussion about the scope of the project. That concludes the report on the various projects from the county. We'll now have the Water Master Plan Desalination and Water Storage Facilities report from our district engineer, Bob Gressens. Bob?
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. I'll briefly summarize our key projects that we've been working on since your last meeting. The Water Master Plan, EIR, the program EIR, and the build-out reduction planning have had a focus of our attention lately. RBF has completed an initial administrative draft to the Coastal Commission for their review and approval. So we can't start until we get that approval process completed with them. And related to that is a drainage plan, which they're also finalizing. The next project ahead was the desalination project. Of course, we had our CEQA hearing for the geotechnical study on October 14th. And at this point, we're doing the permitting applications of the various resource agencies. Many of those depended on that initial study, mitigated neg deck, to be completed and to have the hearing conducted. So that's in progress with State Lands Commission, Regional Water Quality Control Board, Army Corps of Engineers, and National Marine Sanctuary. I've also not heard back from the Army Corps as far as the status of the project cooperation agreement. So I have calls into them, but no news to report to you at this time. The Urban Water Management Plan has also been active lately. That's a plan that was presented to you back in March of this year. We went through a review with the Department of Water Resources. They have a very specific format and procedure they require us to follow, particularly for the water conservation measures. Although we do a lot of these water conservation measures, in some cases we do more than what they call for, they have to be in a specific format that they require. And that's taken some time to resolve. Dean Coker of the Coastwide Wise Group is assisting me on that. We've also had several meetings with Ben Bohr, who was our water conservation coordinator, as well as Corey Ryan, who's picking up that role as probably part-time on that position. So it gets rather involved as far as how the data has to be tracked and so forth, and we're digging into the details right now. And you will have there's a consent calendar item on today's agenda about becoming a signatory agency to the Memorandum of Understanding that was circulated originally back in 1991 by the California Urban Water Conservation Council, which was a group of water agencies. So that's on there because we believe that'll help us in getting through this hurdle with the Department of Water Resources and making sure our data is in the right format and we're following their procedures, because essentially they've modeled their approach after what the Urban Water Council, Water Conservation Council, developed in the past. Lastly, Stewart Street tanks. It's out there as far as backlogged with me in getting the scope of work ironed out and out to the engineers on that. So that concludes my report on water projects for October. I'd be glad to answer any questions you might have.
Any questions of the district engineer?
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Director Shalika.
On the urban water, which is on the consent agenda, when I was reading it through, the implication was that we possibly have to go to full-time employee to take care of that. Did you see it that way or not?
They don't require it to be full-time, but they require someone to be assigned to that position.
Right. Okay.
And as I see it, it's probably going to be two levels. There'll be the coordinator position, which would be Corey's position in this case. But then we still need to resolve the field level. Right now, it's probably going to be the water operators doing that. They do it on an as-requested, as-needed basis, but there are certain details and specifics that are called out by the DWR standards. They call them demand management measures or best management practices. They're almost interchangeable terms. For example, when you do a water survey for water conservation, they put much more emphasis on outdoor irrigation than what we typically do when we're out there. So there's areas like that where we'll probably have more training required and so forth. And one side benefit of that Urban Water Conservation Council is they do provide fairly good and reasonably priced training for member agencies to attend.
I was just concerned there might be a hidden cost that we have to have additional employees. That's what I was worried about.
That is certainly a very good point and one that we're wrestling with right now. And there could be more effort required depending on how Corey's workload works out and how the water operators are able to handle this and the demand that happens. If we can space them out over a period of a couple of months, typically demands come in after the bi-monthly billing middle package through their review. So we're working on all three of those right now.
Okay. Just there's been so much publicity about the delay, so that I'd just like people to know that we're really very close to being ready to go. Would that be right?
That's correct. There's still going to be some mobilization time when the contractor, he's waiting on this as well. And so he's going to have some time to get mobilized out there. I'd sure like to get him out there before the real heavy rains hit.
Mm-hmm.
As it turns out, we probably will be out there in the rain some already, just by the way this is timing out. It's a very busy time right now for a lot of the contractors are trying to wrap things up before the rains hit, so it's not the ideal time to be starting right now.
Thank you.
Bob, approximately how long ago did the project cooperation agreement leave the Los Angeles office of the Corps and get to Washington, D.C.?
I want to say about June or so.
So it's been June, July, August, September, about 4 months. I think we need to set a goal, a date by which this agreement is going to be signed, and I would suggest the next board meeting. And if it means getting on a plane and going back to Washington, D.C., I'm willing to go. We really need to bird dog this. If we don't, we'll be sitting here in October of 2006 wondering where it is. Director Villeneuve and I have gone back for the past 3 years each year, and I think maybe if his schedule permits, perhaps if it's necessary, he'd be willing to go to Washington, D.C. as well. This has to be the top priority, and we've got to get this thing signed, if for no other reason than to stop the bleeding of our budget and start getting the feds to pay the costs of some of these big-ticket items. So perhaps the ad hoc committee, Director Villeneuve and I can meet with you after this meeting, and we'll put together a program and see if we can get a concerted effort going to get this thing signed.
Sounds good.
A miniature report from Sergeant Majors. I did talk to Jerry Hilliva on Friday, and he is going to be in Washington this week and next week. And this is at the top of his list to meet with Senator Talent and to try to get this thing pushed through.
Good.
It just merely requires a signature for the public's information so that we can start the reappropriation process.
Director Villeneuve.
John, I might add that in a conversation I had with Lois Capps, the chief of staff in the San Luis office, just about a month or so ago, and they were going to go look at it also. So, Bob, did you have a chance to talk to Greg Hawes?
Not in recent weeks. He's been very good about keeping us abreast of any developments, but nothing to my recollection within the last few weeks.
It might be worthwhile, to set that up because to follow up on it, because he was going to get the information and then forward it to the Washington D.C. office, and they could, bird dog it and find whoever it is. It's been probably sitting on his desk for about 6 months or so, and either that or he's a very slow reader. Yeah. So
I'm just hoping they didn't lose them in New Orleans somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. I have one request to speak on the Pine Knolls water tank portion of this item. Mady Gracie.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon. How's that?
There you go. That's good.
Good afternoon, directors. My name is Mady Gracie. I live at 984 Manor Way. I'm commenting on the Pine Knolls water tank project. My husband and I continue to have concerns about the magnitude of the project to be built at the end of Manor Way in Pine Knolls. We feel the current design is still too large for the small lot it will be constructed on. We have valid concerns about drainage and possible overflow of water coming off of the site. Our property has been flooded several times in the past from the existing tanks overflowing. We know you have received many letters from neighbors who share the same concerns. Since the proposed new tanks are close to four times larger than the existing ones, thus putting approximately 900,000 gallons of water very close to our home, this continues to be a serious concern. With the large size of the tanks, there is little, if any, room for landscape mitigation. According to Coastal Commission documents, public utility facilities shall be screened on all sides.
Out, particularly after a rainstorm. And when they do so, the pumps that feed them will keep running without turning off. So I think that's been a chronic problem through the life of these tanks that we will be addressing as well. As far as the landscaping goes, we do have an excellent sub-consultant that we'll try to get out there to do the best we can with a very limited area. We were pretty much forced into not having much clearance between the tank and the property lines by the review actions of the Coastal Commission. So at that point, it's out of our hands as far as what we can do with a pretty limited site, which, of course, resulted from reducing the footprint outside of our property line.
Right.
So that's the best I can answer at this point.
Okay. Thank you, Bob. That concludes the Water Master Plan Desalination and Water Storage Facilities Report. We'll now move to the Managers and Board Reports, beginning with the General Manager's Report.
Thank you. I just want to remind the public that there's another holiday coming up next month in November on the 11th. It's a Friday. That's Veterans Day. The district does observe that as an employee holiday. But if there are any problems, our 24-hour number, 927-6223, will be available for reporting any utility service problems. I did report contain a little mini report within my general manager's report about the Citizens Incorporation Committee. They met on October 17th and discussed the potential for a constituent poll that is targeted for public distribution in our November 10th utility billing statement. The committee wishes to engage the Cambria constituents and citizens in the incorporation process to provide some feedback to them when it comes before you at your December meeting and makes its recommendations to the board. The polling will contain a very few questions They will be very simple to respond to. It's not just necessarily a do you want the district to incorporate or not. It's going to allow the committee to have some feedback so that we can take those responses and be able to put them in some format for the committee to come to you in December and discuss. We're going to make it easy for people to return the poll. It can be dropped with their utility payment in person at the district offices in one of our mailboxes or one of our payment locations. I did mention that the Citizens Incorporation Committee will be reporting to you in open session at your December meeting. That's December 15th. That's a different date than the usually scheduled meeting, so I'm just making sure the public is aware that it will be held here at Vets Hall, and it will be our final evening meeting for this year, so it will be at 6 o'clock. I also attached on the back of the report the website page for the Citizens Incorporation Committee. Connie was nice enough to take a really good snapshot of a part of the group. There were some who were absent, and we set up a separate section because we've actually been, the committee requested it, and we've been asked about certain references to the reporting that the committee has done and what they do, their objectives. So if the public is interested in seeing that section on our website, they can go to www.cambriacsd.org, and you will see Incorporation Committee over on the left as a link. Under Parks and Recreation, there were no action items at the last PROS Commission meeting on October 12th. However, the Chair, Jim Ellman, myself as General Manager and Department Head at time, our Grants Coordinator, and then the PROS Committee representatives delivered reports. It was a brief meeting anticipating that we had the town hall meeting, so we got over rather quickly. Due to some scheduling conflicts among the commissioners in November, the regularly scheduled meeting on November 9th is canceled. So the next PROS Commission meeting is Wednesday, December 14th at 5 o'clock in the CCSD Suite 204. And my last item is just reminding not only the board members, but staff and the general public that the November and December district board meetings are scheduled around the upcoming holidays. So the November board meeting is on a Monday, November 21st at 12:30 here at Vets Hall. And then again, the December board meeting is on Thursday, December 15th at 6 o'clock p.m. And that's it.
Thank you. Any questions of the general manager? Apparently not. We'll move on to the utilities manager report. Mr. Bodie.
All right. I'll make it quick as usual. I'll try. Water supply is in pretty good shape. Last meeting, after the meeting, somebody from the public reminded me it was a pretty wet year last year, and I'd forgotten. I was in Chile where it was 100 degrees every day while you had the deluge of the 1st of January. So in my mind, it was kind of a normal dry year. But we've set a record high in San Simeon, and that's due to balancing Santa Rosa with San Simeon. So the wells are in pretty good shape. Santa Rosa is also flowing. It flows 24/7, and it's a beautiful creek, and it's looking good. We're going to try to keep it that way. And perhaps the good rains we had helped out there as well before we get in there and actually roll it flat. And then there's some hand railing that's going to go in there and on the real steep parts. So once that's done, it will really be done. But officially, it's open now. It's a nice trail. I recommend anybody that's go out and take a look at it. And it's not ADA, though. It's got some steep parts in it, so be careful there. The Bluff Trail, since I wrote this, they've started in the center section. They're putting on some decking. It's kind of an Ipe wood-type decking, a nice hardwood. It looks great. That's going to be a great trail when it's done, but it's going along pretty good. The SCADA system, also on next meeting, do another budget amendment on that to try to get the backbone going on the SCADA system, at least get the RFP for it out and have that project going. There's a lot of projects coming up that are going to depend on tying in that for our SCADA, our equipment control, like the Pine Knolls tanks and that. So that's pretty much it. We had one other item that wasn't on my written notes. We're working on our sanitary survey for DHS, and we met with Huck Janagaraj of PayPros to kick that off, and we'll have that done before the end of the year for DHS. And that's what we've got going. Thank you.
Any questions of the utilities manager? Brian, job well done on the Santa Rosa Creek Trail. It's a beautiful project. It's a great asset for the
community. Thanks. There's a lot of people that did a nice job on that.
Yes, they did.
I think we should also congratulate him on keeping the level up on San Simeon. That's a yes. piece of work there. Really good.
That's my main goal. I love that creek. I'm going to keep it going.
Terrific. We'll now have the finance officer's report. Patrick Bradley.
Thank you, President Sanders, members of the board. You have my report in front of you. A couple of items I would like to just very briefly touch on. One is, of course, our reserve balance. Since July of this year through the end of October, our reserves have dropped $1.4 million to a balance of $9.5 million. On the surface, that sounds like a whole lot of money, but we have I've detailed in my report four projects and one potential liability that are close to getting started. And when they all come online and we pay for them, that's going to drop our reserves down to $2.9 million. A consent item was pulled today on RBF, which will certainly drop that even further, because included in this $2.9 million, we also have a number of other items that are also are going to get paid and must come from reserves. District Engineer Bob Gresson's mentioned the Stewart Street tank. That's going to have to come from reserves. We still are finishing up the bill-out reduction, the water master plan, the meter replacement program. All of these are going to be an added pull on our reserve balance, which is really going to drop our reserves down to, in my opinion, a dangerously low position. I appreciated President Sanders' comments earlier about the donation we make to the county, which we do. There's another donation we also make to the state, and that's under our ERAF. And last year, we donated almost over $700,000 to the state of California. It's our donation, if you will, and I put that in quotes because to me, it's a donation is something that you willingly give, not that you're forced to give. So we are also, you know, contributing a ton of money to other state agencies. The last thing I would like to just briefly comment on. The last part of my report was on the 95 bond refinance and the biosolids project that Brian just mentioned. And I really appreciate working with Brian on this because he is really trying to get that cost down on that project. I've submitted some information to a couple of financial people just to see if we can kind of work something that's really tight simply because of the deficit we're running in the sewer department. But I'm going to submit the information. We'll see how it goes. I don't have a whole lot of hope on it, but it's worth trying. The interest rates are still marginal in terms of whether or not it's beneficial to refinance to 95. My guess is we probably won't be able to do it, but it's worth looking at and running a calculation just to see how it all pans out. I'm working now on the budget status reports, and one thing I would like to remind everybody is when I did the budget and the budget that was approved for the current fiscal year anticipated the screw press biosolids to be online January 1 of 05, and obviously that's not going to happen, so that's going to further dig into our reserve balance, if you will. So with that, that concludes my report, and I'll be happy to answer any questions or any comments.
Any questions of the finance officer? Director Coben.
Patrick, on the front of your report, where you've listed out projects and their cost, what is the status of the state loan? That have you ever heard from them as to whether they're expecting us to pay it or not?
No, I have not. Okay. We've got a, as part of our audit this year, we sent them a confirmation. I was kind of hoping that's going to trigger something. Okay. My intent is
of the finance officer. Hearing none, we'll move to board member and committee reports. Are there any board member and or committee reports? Apparently not. We'll move to the consent calendar. The general manager will read the consent calendar items remaining on the agenda.
Okay. 7A is to approve the expenditures for the month of September 2005. 7C is to consider adoption of Resolution 58-2005 supporting the Association of California Water Agencies, AQUA, their blueprint for California water. Item 7D is to consider adoption of Resolution 59-2005 authorizing CUWCC, that stands for California Urban Water Conservation Council, the membership and approval of the Memorandum of Understanding regarding urban water conservation. Item 7E is to consider adoption of Resolution 60-2005, authorizing Corolla Task Order for Continued Desalination Project Management and Permitting Assistance. and item 7F was pulled.
Is there a motion to approve the consent agenda as amended and read?
I'll make that motion.
Is there a second to the motion?
I'll second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda as amended and read. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? So ordered.
Yeah. I'd just like to, for the edification of the public, that I can't, at this point in time, I can't suggest, I know that the California Water Agency, AQUA, has a website. If your this report that the and by the way the AQUA has almost more than 400 water agencies throughout the state of California, is also considered one of the most powerful water agency group in the United States, a very very influential group of you know, water agencies. And this no time to waste, a blueprint for California water by the Association of California Water Agencies, has become a real wake-up call. It's long overdue. It's a master plan for addressing what is already a crisis in the state of California. And not just identifying the problem, but providing a blueprint, as it says, to jumpstart the state and the federal government and all participating, you know, water agencies to begin to get a serious fix on how to approach the impending disastrous deficiency in water in the state of California. So if you would want to get to that website, it's pretty easy. You can, at the bottom of this, if you get a copy of the agenda, there is the website. Yes, thank you. It gives you the, it's www.aqua.com/issues/blueprint/endorsements. And coincidentally, the last part of that is .asp, and that certainly is the message that should be addressed. And
ASAP,
I think,
right?
Yeah.
And so I just wanted to repeat, that's www.acw.com. And when I'm just going to steer people toward it because I'm the one who provided those attachments. They have a really good executive summary, a good questions and answers forum, and you, when you come to the AQUA website, it has Blueprint for California. You just simply click on it.
Very good. Thank you, Don. It's now time for hearings and appeals. We have one appeal, a water bill modification. The applicant is Marilyn Steinfield. Is there a staff report?
Yes, this is for a request for modification for July-August 2005 utility bill for their water and sewer. I'm recommending, based on staff's observations and field investigations, that we modify this customer's bill toward their normal consumption, which is typically 4 units. This utility bill is for 102 units of water, and it's for 1681 Newhall Avenue. The total of the bill for water was $607.84, and for sewer, $215.25, for a total of $823.09. If the modification is approved, it just results in lost water and sewer revenues. The service call that was made on September 2nd was from a customer who actually lived on Randall Drive, and they're the ones who reported that there was water running down Randall Drive, which is not related to Newhall Avenue. It took our field investigators from the water department to go out and search the leak and find out that it was coming from an underground service line break.
I've lived in Cambria about 12 years, and actually my average consumption is closer to 2 units per month, I guess that is. And I did get a higher bill, which changed the average, and I'd just like to explain that, if I can. I
sure.
lost 11 units the bill before, but I had a bit of vacation to take care of Exhibit A, Mike Davidson. He was scheduled for knee surgery in June, and I bit a vacation, so I was home every day, which makes my water bill higher. but because he helped with Camp Reach for the Stars and setting up the camp, he tweaked his back, and I went to the emergency room 3 times in June. Had to go to the pharmacy to pick up drugs for him. And anyway, I wasn't paying attention to the bill. I have it automatically paid, but because of all the medical crises in my life, mother, cat, boyfriend, I didn't notice that it was 11 units, which should have been my key, because I probably didn't open the mail in July. I was totally crazy. And he finally had back surgery in August 5th, and of course that's when I knew I was in deep trouble, the day before Pine Dorado as I was leaving for work. But thanks to Don Spillman, he came while I was out of town. So anyway, I apologize for the loss, and I hope it can be adjusted, because I have no pension.
and the plumbing repair bill is there, and it was immediate. So,
thank you.
While you're there, has the water department instructed Ms. Stanfield on what to look for in terms of leaking water in the future?
I'm making an assumption by their field notes that they talked to you, because that's what they said, that they discussed the break with you on the side yard.
Pat Clark, you mean?
Right.
Mm-hmm. He did call. I did talk to him. And I guess that's how I actually had Don Spillman talk with him further. Like I say, this was in the evening, and I was leaving for work really soon on Labor Day, which, you know, nobody works. So they had turned my water off. It didn't affect me because I was going to be gone. But as far as how to detect a leak...
Well, you know what to look for. In other words, I think we would expect that periodically you would look on Randall Street to see if any property or any water is flowing through the property that's behind you.
No, I can't say that I do.
And to be mindful that there's only one water bill modification per customer per lifetime. So this is literally, if this gets approved today, that's all for this property that can be permitted.
I would suggest that the water department make an appointment with her and just walk you through.
We can do that.
You know, what to look for.
Okay, I don't know how to read my meter.
Be happy to show you how to do that.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Director Chaldecott.
Yeah, Mr. President, I was going to talk about this because I think we're going to run into a problem that folks, because we're going to have our meters read remotely, no one will be clearing off the dust and debris above the meters.
Right.
So who wants to get in amongst the spiders? Well, that's really where you find out if you have a water leak. And a little dial will spin around. And really, if you're going to be away from the house for a few days or more, it's worth looking at that to make certain that's not spinning when you leave home, because that's the indication there's still water going, you know, through the meter. And I think we're going to run into this, that people are just not going to want to look at that because it's too dusty and dirty. And these are the people, this is going to happen, and particularly with winter when trees uproot, and that's when the pipes get broken frequently. You know, I see a real problem coming down the pike, and we should just warn folks to be diligent.
I'd like to suggest that at a future meeting, maybe within the next 3 months or so, we have another presentation by Jim Adams on how the meters work, how the leak detection system works, what to look for, and... That way, better get the word out on what leak detection and customer responsibility is all about.
That's a really good time. We have talked amongst ourselves as staff that that's about the time the installation project will be finished, and we can report on that, too. So we'll just bring all that back as one package.
Terrific.
But, you know, we did send out a picture of the water meter for everybody to see. So all right, is everybody reading their mail?
It's available online as well.
Director Coben.
Well, I was just going to say, it's not the kind of thing that's uppermost in your mind each day. But maybe we need to develop a little volunteer housekeeping tour group that goes around and dusts off water meters so people won't be afraid to do it.
And they'll be dirty 5 minutes after you dust it off. Yeah,
exactly. Is there anyone else who would like to be heard on this item? Seeing none, what is the pleasure of the board?
I'd like to remove the recommended action, please.
Is there a second to the motion?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to adopt the recommended action. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. The bill is adjusted.
We should make it clear that if water had been running down her own yard, we would not have acted this way. It's strictly the circumstance.
I totally agree with you. I would not be making the same recommendation if it would have been visible.
Exactly. We'll now move on.
Please present our preliminary draft, at least, of the build-out reduction program.
We did receive our bond report this morning, and we are currently developing an estimate of the cost for purchasing copies, and I think as soon as we get that out there, we'll let the public know on that. I will be doing a presentation on the preliminary draft.
Bob, before you start, on that score regarding the availability of copies of the report, we have only a limited number of copies at the present time, but we will take a list today, and if you want to put your name on the list when we get the copies for the public printed, we'll make sure you have one available for you.
It's going to the back table with District Clerk Kathy Choate. She has a pad back there. That will be their formal public records request.
Right.
We don't have the exact cost of the report yet. It will be made available online as well, probably within the next few days after we get finished with this report.
Thank you. Thank you. Bob, go ahead.
And I'd also like to, again, acknowledge the ad hoc committee for their help as we did at our town hall meeting workshop. Mainly Bill Allen, Wayne Ryburn, Wayne Perrick, as well as Director Sanders and Director Coben. So thank you for the time spent at those meetings. This is going to be pretty close to what was presented on the 14th. There's been a few little pieces of information in the draft edits that I have a couple of slides on. So I will go fairly quickly. But feel free to stop me if I'm going too fast or if a question comes up. So, Carlos, let's start with just the next slide, please. The presentation outline is fairly close to the way the report's laid out. The introduction and preliminary overview, the water master plan background, policy and regulatory background, mapping and supporting data, the build-out reduction strategy, that is the toolbox and how to reduce build-out, talk a little bit about implementation and stop for questions at the end. Not mentioned here is the financial analysis, and that's a key piece of work that's still in progress. We're going to be doing multiple scenarios on that and present that information in the future. And whether that's a separate report or a section still remains to be sorted out as we approach the final stages on this. Next slide. The just talking a little bit about the historical development in Cambria. Of course, we have the commonly referred to as antiquated subdivisions that occurred in the 1930s when most of Lodge Hill and other areas were laid out with the relatively small lots that are typically 25 feet wide and 70 feet long. We have infrastructure limitations, such as narrow roads, problems with fire access, and so forth. And we'll get into this in more detail in the details of the presentation. This, of course, ties into our water supply planning. It makes planning for the future difficult when you look at all the various lots and the rules that apply to developing the lots. Primarily, the build-out reduction program is to address the growth concerns and how they tie to our program-level EIR for the Water Master Plan, which is going on in a parallel track. Next slide, please. As mentioned in the past, it'll be used to identify the feasible mitigation measures that will address the growth-inducing impacts of future water supply projects. The Water Master Plan EIR will include the build-out reduction program, and it's a tool to cap the maximum number of potential water service connections within our service area. Next slide. Just an overview of the Water Master Plan. We did Phase 1 a while back, which really initiated a lot of the detailed GIS mapping and some of the earlier build-out modeling based on slope and so forth. Phase 2 was a water supply availability analysis, which Kenny Jinks developed at that time, and that included a water supply model. The Phase 3 was looking at the distribution systems for the existing potable water system. There was a separate report, and that, of course, identified some of the deficiencies for fighting fires, as well as a recycled water distribution system report, which is a separate standalone report. Phase four is the assessment of long-term water supply and alternatives, and that resulted essentially in the continued water conservation, future recycled water supply, as well as seawater desalination. Next slide. Transfer development credit program, which is existing and they're expanding some. They also talk about lot consolidation and retirement. Formation of a small lot open space district, protection, particularly in the Monterey Pine Forest area. And then there's some provisions about new land divisions, which require lot retirements. Next slide. As far as their summation of the lot consolidation and retirement program, they want to encourage lot consolidation through voluntary mergers and other mechanisms, retire vacant lots through acquisition, formation of the open space district, again, to the retirement of development rights to protect the resources, preserve the Monterey Pine Forest, reduce the potential number of homes, and improve fire clearance and the impacts of on the limited resources. They go on to say that purchased lots should be considered for a variety of purposes, such as pocket parks, view sheds, habitat preservation, other uses to the community. Next slide. Some of the principal concerns that they cite in their report is water supply, traffic capacity, availability of municipal services at affordable cost, and protection of natural resources. Next slide. In their report, they have various scenarios or alternatives. They call their existing setting, or the no growth, at about 4,000, is rounded up to 4,000 housing units. They have a proposed plan that was 4,975. The existing plan they use for comparison purposes, which I put down as the 1988 plan, or thereabouts, which was 11,925 at that time. So you can see there's a significant reduction that's occurring with their update. Their what they call increased development is 6,130, which is essentially a build-out capacity number under the current plan. So just comparing that number with 11,925, you can see there's a significant reduction right there. And then there's the decreased development scenario, which is the 4,650, which is in alignment with our goal. And appears to be the environmentally superior goal that the Planning Commission is leaning towards. I think they'll make a decision on this their November 10th meeting. Next slide. This slide is rather lengthy, and I won't read the whole thing. But this is one of the things that was a catalyst to doing the build-out reduction plan, and it's from the periodic review of the local or the San Luis Obispo County local coastal program, and it's a recommendation of the Coastal Commission, and it was a recommendation 2.16, and essentially calling for it to be amended to address the long-term development potential in Cambria. And again, we took this to heart, and we've run with it in developing this program. Next slide. Talk a little bit about the technical portions of the work, which RBF did. Primarily, it was Steve Bynes' group, and it was the data to support, develop the data to support the build-out strategy, how they organized the data and analyzed it, and then finally some of the output from the GIS analysis together with how that ties to fire code provisions. Next slide. Is there a way, perhaps, to reduce the size of that slightly so we can – thank you. Basically, their model looks at the lot reduction goals, has a number of existing connections, the water waitlist positions, other outstanding commitments, and that equals the connection goal of 4,650. They then take how do you justify the goal? They take all lots, less those that are already retired or are owned by land conservancies, such as Green Space or the land conservancy of San Luis Obispo County. take those out of there, and then apply buildability criteria, some public safety criteria, and then environmental criteria, and that'll yield your reduced your lot reduction. Thank you. That's if you can tap that again for the next one. Thank you. Single-family residential lots was an area of focus. Again, it was primarily the smaller, antiquated subdivision lots, but they did an inventory of all the lots in that category, and it was 11,611. They used some land use criteria that were a bit negotiated through discussions with the county that are within. Town just went out on this. Is this working? Okay. All right. In 1966, the county passed a lot consolidation ordinance. Okay.
Bob, the volume is not
okay.
Projected.
All right. Is it any better?
No. In fact, none of them are working, just so you know. I just turned mine on, and it's not working either. Is anybody working on their microphone?
Yeah, none of them are working. Yep.
Okay, I could talk a lot louder, so if that helps, I'll talk a lot louder. Can you hear me back there?
We'll
okay. Basically, what happened was there was there's a number of
apparently the video is not picking up. All right, there we go. It's back on.
Back on?
Thank you.
I'll lower it down then. I'll
there you go.
Pretend I'm rooting for the White Sox or something. But
rub it in, Bob.
I know.
Keep
I
it
know.
Up.
I'm having fun this week. there's a basically some of the mapping that RBF did was look at the existing structures, and in this case, it's the yellow footprints that are shown of the buildings versus the lot lines, and you could see a lot of them overlap lot lines. It's kind of unusual practice to allow buildings to be built over lot lines, but part of that is because there was a 1966 lot consolidation ordinance that required two of these substandard lots to be a allowed building site. The term consolidation doesn't match the Subdivision Map Act, where they use the term merger, and merger means that lot line goes away. So that creates a considerable complication in how you analyze this, and there's another slide further on this that'll go into further detail. But the visual survey they did was based on a September 2003 aerial photo. Next slide. Can we scoot that over a little bit? Okay, great. In their analysis of the data, the developed single-family residential lots totaled about 6,646, and the vacant single-family residential lots totaled 4,965. Next slide. This is part of one of the newer slides that we developed. We're still doing some analysis on common ownerships, but just for an example, show three lots here, A, B, and C, and the number of vacant lots that have one or more common adjacent owners. So say you're looking at lot B, for example. It might be the same owner of lot B owns lot A or owns lot C. There was 1,443 of such cases. And then they looked at how many lots were in common ownership within that group. And there was 446 that were in groups of two. There were 91 groupings where it was groups of three, 21 in groups of four lots, and then 21 that had five or more under common ownership. So where this has a bearing is it looks at, okay, if you had two vacant lots merged, how many lots might drop out? Yeah, and out of that group, there's a potential of maybe 579 lots being reduced so that that may not require us to look at the acquisition, say, for that many of those lots. We have to do more ownership analyses on this, but this also affects the financial analysis and how you start looking at these different potential combinations. Next slide. They're also looked at the fire code enforcement criteria. This particular slide shows some of the roadway systems where we have problems. I believe the red ones are shown that are either too steep, have some significant limits on getting emergency vehicles through there, and it could be because of width as well. Next slide. Other fire code dangers, and a lot of this was based on the input from Chief Putney, who we also thank for all his time spent on this. There's right now we have the fire hazard fuel reduction and concerns about the close proximity of structures with a high fuel load. There's fire chimneys that will be shown. There's combinations of how you look at that, as well as the restricted access, which was on the prior slide. Next, please. Good as a toolbox approach, and I'll go through that next. First of all, we have some existing programs that we do use. We have, of course, our waitlist administration, but there's things in our code, for example, related to water meter transfers and waitlist positions that result in a retirement of a lot. There's also times where owners will approach us and we'll help facilitate a lot retirement. That happens on occasion. Next slide. We have restrictions within our code that are subject to covenants and agreements that restrict the use of certain parcels. We earlier on looked at areas that have deed restrictions that prevent a more denser development to occur on particular property. There's also some very specific agreements that the district's entered into at certain properties that also apply to successors of interest to those properties that will prevent them from having a much higher build-out density. And finally, there's the fire code plan checking that we go through currently that includes reviewing the fire code with the building code. For example, if you have if you have a wall within 3 feet of a lot line, it has to be a fire-rated wall with no openings. So on some occasions, it just doesn't work out with the plan, and you end up merging a lot to get rid of the lot line so that you don't have that requirement. Next slide. As far as the voluntary density reduction, there's the transfer of development credit program that currently exists where you have sender and receiver properties that helps fund the Land Conservancy of San Luis Obispo County. The county does have a voluntary lot merger program in place. There's some conservation easements that exist. There's the lot development rights acquisition program, and then finally some financial incentives for the voluntary measures. Next slide. Some of the constraints and the attrition for the that are part of the regulations here is the Coastal Commission development permit restricts water connections in no more than 5,250 housing units. There's also fire safety conditions related to the topography, the fuel loads, and so forth. Next slide. So in essence, we have for fire protection, we are the fire protection authority for within our service area. You have the urban wildland interface code that our fire department follows, the state fire code. There's the fire risk zones that have been mapped, as well as there's some potential to expand the fire code, for example, on building restrictions. Next slide.
other part of this is on land use restrictions. You have the lot consolidation mergers, the Cambry design plan that calls out the setbacks and so forth, as well as our current water code moratorium from the 350 declaration. Next slide. Potential means for of lot retirement include the transfer of development credits, voluntary mergers, lot retirements in conjunction with meter transfers, lot retirements in conjunction with lots being developed. We're going to look at a tree mitigation program in a little more detail, the purchase of conservation easements, and then outright lot acquisition. And these go in a fashion such that you go from the less costlier ones down to the more costlier. So lot acquisition is the most costly part of the toolbox. Next slide. Potential funding mechanisms that are going to be looked at in the financial section, at least, include water connection fees, special taxes and assessments, for example, a Mello-Roos type of assessment on the CCSD waitlist lots, and then government foundation or other sources of outside funding. Next slide. Things for our implementation include right now is to continue the coordination efforts with the county during the review and processing of the community plan, because that affects build out. There's more analysis needed on this common ownership and merger potential, as well as the financial analysis. Once we get this all packaged up, it'll become part of probably four lots, four of the smaller lots.
Mm. Which would be something we'd like to see happen if that were possible, I'm sure of it.
Yeah, currently the county requirements on that call for a building site to be two lots. Okay. So it's about 3,500 square foot minimum. And that you can go smaller than that if you are grandfathered in based on your chain of ownership. So there's certain nuances to that allow going even less than that.
And there's a chart, you got number three, policy and regulatory coordination. It's at the bottom of the second page.
Yes.
All right. Uh-huh. What I wanted to clarify was increased development, 6,130. Is that a increment? In other words, that's what? There would be an additional 6,130?
No, that's total. That would be existing plus future.
Okay. So that's kind of the highest that could be possible.
That's basically where the county would say if you projected this in time, yeah, it would start flattening out.
And what we're looking at is 4,650 as
right,
a total, yeah. The reason I mention that is I keep hearing people ask, is it an additional 4,650? And I'm just wondering, yeah, if we need to, you know, clarify that really clearly for people. That,
oh, thank you for, yeah, bringing that point, yeah, up. Yeah, that is existing,
yeah,
plus future. So right now we have roughly 3,800 residential, right, connections out of those numbers. So when you look at that, for example, the 4,650 was, right, our wait list plus the existing customers.
So there's kind of like two competing goals. One is 4,650, which is ours, mm-hmm, and the other one is 6,130.
Right, that's the gap.
Yeah, and is that's basically coming from the county at this present time?
Well, I've been following the, yeah, Planning Commission meetings, Tammy and Directors mm-hmm, Coben and mm-hmm, Sanders have been there, and from what I am sensing, it is they're honing in on the 4,650 decreased development alternative.
So is the 6,130 likely to come up from anywhere that you're aware of?
I'm sorry.
Is the 6,130 likely to come up from somewhere? Is someone like to float that as being a total number?
Well, that is the county's total number without any build out reduction,
okay,
based on their land use planning as it now stands.
Okay.
But as Bob says, I think it's apparent to those of us who have been attending the Planning Commission meetings as they deliberate the Cambria and San Simeon community plans that they understand the constraints that we have in this community in terms of traffic infrastructure and so forth. And it appears that they're trending in the direction of a build-out maximum of 4,650 units.
Could I say, because yesterday when I was there, the commission has gone so far as to direct staff to come back with language that expressly selects that 4,650 for the EIR, so that they've asked them to come back with the language, so they just will next meeting have just allocated a certain amount of time to review it and approve the language. But
that's a credit to you guys and to staff for being dogged.
Yes, all those people.
And the ratepayers in town who paid for the necessary consulting time to convince the county of the merits of our plan.
Yeah, it's been a slow but steady progress all the way. And we also should point out that Bob's made this presentation in the absence of our consultants who are ill. Thanks, Bob, because it wasn't your study to do. You were just the responsible person for it. But
you're certainly welcome, and I really I'm glad to fill in for Glenn. He was under here.
Yeah.
In extreme duress and working in pain last time he was here, and so he's at home based on doctor's advice, and but he still got the report to us. So
good.
Appreciate their efforts behind the scenes.
It's been wonderful working with this group of consultants because they've all become so committed to this goal or to our project that their creativity never ends, and they keep. As a matter of fact, it was hard to stop them from keeping studying and looking and analyzing and so forth. But they really have been wonderful.
Very true. Very true.
I have
yes,
just
Director
Shaw. One more question. This is a preliminary draft report. Is this the right time to start making lots of copies? Is there going to be a much more finalized report that we put out? I think putting it on the net is great, but I'm just wondering if that's a good idea.
I think we'll make this available. We're figuring out the cost of it.
The public, and I can't imagine having an extraordinary number printed, since it will be on the district's website. But for those who want to purchase a printed copy, I think we ought to have them available.
Could I ask a question?
Sure. Director Villeneuve.
Has the county developed tried to identify basically the subdivisions that were the lots that were created by a subdivision in 1930, 29 and 30, where they just virtually put a grid over the terrain with no particular concern as to whether or not the slope is just it's identified as a lot, but if you visit it, the only way you'd be able to build a house is with a skyhook, and I, as far as I know, the county has never developed a minimum slope requirement or any other basically trying to identify where there's virtually unbuildable lots that they're just existing on paper. And that, if you take those out of the mix, that is just total. If you go down, if you're doing just looking at all the subdivision lots that were created in 1930 and 29 and 30, and they'd say, okay, these are all potentially buildable. And then you go to those areas down the canyon or hanging on a slope that's almost vertical. If they're counting those, that removing those would seem to simplify. They focus on how you then could do a lot consolidation on those existing lots that are potentially buildable at least.
Don, could I add that those
Director
of us
Coven.
As well, we get these kinds of questions from the community. We ask them to create this little graphic that was one of the slides, and it answers your question, Peter, about the 4650, because it tells us how we came to those numbers. And then the last line indicates the criterion. through which they screened the lots. So they're saying, okay, we've got the existing lots, and then the ones that are built on, and then what's left, they screen them through these three criterion of environmental, fire safety, and the buildability.
That's right. And the database enables us to determine the so-called developability or buildability of each lot. So we can identify on a lot-by-lot basis which lots fall into the category that you're talking about. The concern is that, a good civil engineer sitting in the dark thinking about how to engineer a project can build a house on just about anything. So one way or another, even those lots that are in the non-developable category should be retired in some fashion. Yet to be determined, perhaps with conservation easements or neighboring property owners can acquire them and use them as buffer space, whatever. But the study is comprehensive. It includes every single lot in town.
Well, I know that from prior experience with the in the city of Ventura, San Buenaventura, that in the late 60s, early 70s, I think it was, they established a hillside ordinance and put in place a hillside ordinance, which just totally eliminated the potential for development along Foothill Boulevard. Of course, it closed the barn door after the chickens and everything else had escaped because two great big, large developments had already been developed. But when they started sliding off the hillside, then that belatedly they decided they better put a hillside ordinance in place, and that that's legal. You know, they can change the ordinance or provide an ordinance where there isn't one existing, and I guess the rationale is that it's hazardous, or it will burden the services for the community unduly, and so it seems to me. Furthermore, it wasn't that long ago that the county came up with a minimum lot buildable lot consolidation was a minimum of two parcels. You know, that's 50 feet of.
Have numbers on them.
No, I don't. Oh, it's on page 3. Okay.
While they're putting response, Don, I think that as we flesh out the financial plan, what we're really very concerned with and making sure that we don't impact the market or in it, that we're fair and understanding of people who have purchased a lot and to try to, you say it better, Greg.
Well, I think the long and the short of it is there's still work to be done here. Not coincidentally, many of the lots that Director Villeneuve is talking about are in the fire chimney areas. They're in areas where the terrain is very steep. And as a consequence of that, there are certain regulatory powers that the district has through the Uniform Fire Code, which allow us to restrict development and do things that are necessary to preserve the public safety in those areas. But again, this will get fleshed out as we get into the final draft of the report. Director Chaldicott?
What I was thinking is we're dealing with the lower drawings there. It would be good if every lot owner could actually put their lot into this chart and see if it's if it meets the buildability, public safety, and environmental standards and be able to work out for themselves that it fails or it passes. Do you think we'll hopefully get that? You know, I mean, to me it sounds that it would take it out of the realm of shouting back and forth. You'd just be able to say,
I think by the time the study is finished, a lot owner would be able to take the different criteria and measure them against his or her lot and determine
I think do you see it getting that way eventually?
Yes, and I'm a little hesitant to get too specific because we're not going to identify individual lots as part of this exercise. We're going to have a goal where we have certain criteria that we apply to that so that I think it would be up to the individual lot owner to try to assess that. But I don't think it's going to be a mandate from us identifying a specific parcel or something of that to that level of detail. These are our general rules we're applying to come up with the build out reduction goal and the toolbox that's going to be used to acquire that. And I think as Director Coben mentioned, to try to be fair about this, and if it does come down to an acquisition process.
But Bob, I think Peter's correct. If an individual lot owner wanted to do that, the aerial pictures are available, and so maybe we could talk about that and think about how to make access to people if they wanted them. I don't know.
I was just thinking that the buildability would be based on the GIS primarily.
Yeah, or it could come to given certain areas priority for retirement. Exactly how that flushes out at the end, I can't say at this point, but we talked about it. Maybe that would be an area where the TDC program, you could somehow enhance that to develop more incentive to acquire those lots first since they're a fire hazard type thing. But
I think if we're working towards these three criteria, I think we're doing the right thing, and it's something which the public will be able to evaluate alongside us and see if we're being arbitrary or whether it's real. Right. So I think that's good. Thank you.
Good. Any other questions of Bob Gressens? Thank you, Bob. We have four requests to speak on this item. Wayne Ryburn was the first to submit.
I was going to speak on your other item.
I'm sorry. Thank you. See, glasses. They're here for a reason. Rick Hawley submitted a form. Rick?
Name is Richard Hawley. I'm a resident of Cambria, and I just want to say what a bold move this is and what a progressive move this is, and I really applaud all the work that's gone into it, and I think it's a really good way to spend public resources to protect our community in numerous ways that Mr. Gresham's defined. I just have a couple of questions that I'd like to clarify and maybe also shed some light on some of the questions that were raised here. The issue of granny units and the district's goal of 4650 and exactly what that means and how I would think that the Coastal Commission would welcome something lower. And I'm hoping that would be the case.
That's the assumption.
Yeah, okay. And having gone to many of the Planning Commission meetings also, I'd like to acknowledge Sarah Christie's work on this. She's really been a champion of this, in my view. So I think we should, as a Planning Commissioner, we should thank her for her efforts helping us on that venue. And I guess that's about it. And I think we 4650 is a laudable goal, but I think maybe we can even go lower. So don't leave that out of the scenario either. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rick. Mm-hmm. Before I call the next speaker, since Rick acknowledged the work of Planning Commissioner Sarah Christie, I think we're compelled to say that Bruce Gibson, the recently appointed planning commissioner representing this area, has done a terrific job steering the Planning Commission in the direction of the community's goals. We started with the county down this path analyzing the first draft of the Cambria Community Plan, and I think the original target in the county plan was something like 11,000 housing units. And we had to work with the county staff to get them down to 6,130, and Bruce Gibson's appointment was very timely. He took it from there and has done yeoman's work in terms of taking the time to understand what it is we're trying to do, understand all of the infrastructure constraints that we're laboring under here, and getting a comprehensive view of the whole build-out reduction program, why it's necessary, and how it relates to all of our future infrastructure planning and so forth. So kudos not only to Sarah Christie, but to Bruce Gibson as well. We appreciate their work. All of the commissioners, as a matter of fact, we appreciate their work. We'll now hear from Steve Cole.
Steve Cole, Cambria. By the way, the this plan, I have a lot of respect for it, a lot of good effort, and it's a great movement for our future, towards our good future. And also, I recognize Bruce Gibson. I've and the work he's been doing in our community. My thoughts today are on low-cost housing and how that fits into our lot reduction, build-out reduction, water meter connection effort, and if they are in conflict. I don't know if anyone had any comment on that.
I can kind of kick that off. You have hit upon one of the remaining areas in terms of the relationship between the district and the county that needs to be worked out. And I think the answer is that there's no resolution yet. I think through a series of discussions with the county and interaction with the county, we have grown to understand that the county has certain mandates that they're laboring under from the state, principally the Department of Housing and Community Development, to provide more affordable housing in the county. And to many of us, it seemed as if they were trying to balance their affordable housing books entirely in Cambria. Having said that, I want to make it clear that this board has, I think, done more than any other community services district in San Luis Obispo County to facilitate affordable housing. We have facilitated a people's self-help housing project. We facilitated a Habitat for Humanity project. And we fully recognize the need for affordable housing in this community. It's not entirely clear yet how the affordable housing requirement is going to mesh with the build-out cap. And the picture may not come into focus even after the Planning Commission finishes its work. I think that's a matter that's going to have to be worked out as the plan goes up the ladder to the Board of Supervisors and the Coastal Commission. There will be a resolution.
Some 2,000 or so. 2,200 lots, and people that have money, they bought these lots, you know, decades ago or even maybe fairly recently. And some of these you're going to have to purchase, I assume, or the agency is going to have to purchase. How are you going to value them? What criteria?
We've, through RBF as the primary consultant, we've retained the services of the Nadelson Company, which is one of the country's foremost economic analysis firms. They are putting together a financial model that will enable us to ascertain what the cost of build-out reduction is going to be under various scenarios, including the most draconian scenario for us, which would be acquisition of all of the lots that are not going to be developed. That's, as I say, a draconian scenario. I think
using some very reasonable assumptions, the number of lots that the district would acquire would come down significantly. I can assure you that not only can we not, but we wouldn't even try to circumvent the requirement in the Fifth Amendment to the United States Constitution that says you can't take property without paying just compensation, and that means fair market value.
So there'd be some, you know, like for instance, if we wanted to try to acquire a property next to us, how would you go about that? Are you going to set the standard?
We'll have a process in place yet to be determined whereby if there's an opportunity for the acquisition of a lot that can be retired and sold, for example, to a neighboring homeowner who wants a larger yard, that can happen. And I assume that at each level of transaction, fair market value would be paid. So a lot could be acquired. It could be encumbered with a conservation easement, which would lower the value, and then sold to a neighboring property owner.
Is there a preference to merge the lots, thereby the agency not being forced to keep them cleared, and you know that then the onus is on the property owner?
Absolutely.
So are you going to try to facilitate this in some way?
Or
yet to be determined, I understand.
Well, I mean, we could, if you have about 4 hours, you know, we could probably walk you through every step. But I think the district is going to wind up being a facilitator. We will have in place mechanisms by which all of these various lot retirement scenarios can be affected.
Okay. I had one other question. It had to do with the Mello-Roos Act being one of your options to, I assume, cover the cost of the net increase in infrastructure to serve the remaining, you know, the 4,600 and odd lots that are going to be served. Is that the only option, or and then what are the tax implications on the lot owners or those who actually get to develop their lots?
District Council is itching to answer that one.
The Mello-Roos Act allows the creation of an assessment tax to fund specified improvements or acquisitions or a number of things. It's actually a very flexible legislation that has been sometimes called the legislation that allows designer districts. So the actual way it would be configured is yet to be determined, but regardless of which lots are included in that assessment, the lot owners would have to vote and pass the tax by a two-thirds margin before it's implemented. So
the lot owners, not the residents?
The lot owners that are assessed, which could include the residents. I don't believe there's any plans on doing that right now. But the Act allows you to not have all the lots contiguous or all the houses, as long as the lots vote in that particular assessment for the purpose, it can be implemented and it becomes a tax.
The only discussion about a Mello-Roos district involves the lots on the water wait list, like yours, and that's in reaction to the organization that many of the lot owners belong to. They approached the district and suggested the Mello-Roos concept as a way to help fund various district needs, from desalination plant to lot retirement.
Well, the problem I see with that is that you know, I've seen it with housing developments, that they bear the sole cost of the schools, and they bear a very disproportionate cost of any infrastructure that, you know,
paying property taxes. If they come off, if they're sold or purchased by us or something, will they no longer be paying property taxes?
If they're owned by a public agency, they're off the tax rolls. But there's an assumption that I think you'll see in the next draft of the build-out reduction program, that many of these lots are going to remain in private ownership. We've been approached by a number of homeowners in Cambria who have homes on small lots who are fortunate enough to have a vacant lot next door. And they have asked that if that lot is retired, that they be allowed to purchase it so that they can expand the size of their yard, for example. I'm kind of grabbing at straws here, but my recollection is that going through the GIS data that we have now, there are somewhere between 700 and 800 of those lots that are out there that could be an adjunct to a presently developed lot. And so a lot of those lots will remain in private ownership, we assume.
But there'll be quite a few that would end up.
Correct.
Meaning we'd have to reassess the property taxes to make up for the loss of income to the county.
Well, under Proposition 13, your taxes can't increase by more than 2% per year.
Well, they do that well.
And they do that anyway.
Yeah, I was just curious because of what would happen to increase in, you know, the loss of revenue to the county.
Sure.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yes, Bill Allen.
Bill Allen. I just wanted to try and give Steve a little more assurance on the low-cost housing. At the Planning Commission meeting yesterday, this was discussed. Penny Rappa, who is one of the planning commissioners, is very gung-ho on low-cost housing. She's involved in that effort. She is a member of the board of the Habitat for Humanity, and I think I can assure you, Steve, that, this element was discussed yesterday, but there's language to be in there that hasn't been completely decided on, but I think I can assure you that low-cost housing will get a fair share in this when it's finally put together.
Thank you, Bill. I should mention Commissioner Penny Rappa as well. She's been very good about listening to our concerns. She took time out of her busy schedule to meet with us at her home, and we owe her a great deal of thanks for that. And she's been doing yeoman service along with the other planning commissioners as well. Anybody else that would like to speak on this item? Apparently not. I don't think any action is required today other than to assure the community that this is a work in progress, and it will be back before the board a few more times before it's finally adopted and incorporated into the environmental impact report for the water master plan. Director Chaldicott.
Do you think we should dispel the rumor that CCSD is already out buying lots at X percent on the dollar?
Yes. We received a letter that more than implied. I think it actually stated that we're out driving down the cost of lots and we're buying them for 10 cents on the dollar. And in some respects, I wish that was true. So, it would make lot retirement a lot cheaper. But that's absolutely not the case. The district has acquired quite a few lots. We have been able to put together some deals that make a lot of economic sense, and at very little cost to the district, we've been able to retire quite a number of lots over the last few years.
May I further add that that letter inferred that we as staff may have reported that and yes. or that it was inferred from an article written in the Cambrian. So I just want to clarify that in no way has staff ever been out there saying that we were looking for lots for 10 cents of the dollar, or am I aware of any article, and I'm not going to speak on behalf of the Cambrian, that it was stated in there that we were looking for lots for 10 cents on the dollar.
However, if somebody has a lot for
sale,
Art 10 cents on the dollar, we're all ears.
Art and I are the negotiators, and we are happy to meet with anyone.
Yeah. Exactly.
If there is anybody here that's eager to do that, we'll sign you up immediately.
You bet.
And last but not least, may I just allow for a few days for us to get this on the website. Last time we maybe fell into a little bit of a problem where people thought...
Individual board members requested that I look at the possibility of an ordinance that would somehow deal with that issue, and rather than go off into a major project without the complete board direction, this is brought for your consideration and direction to staff as to whether it would be appropriate to engage in that particular research. The direction that we're looking at is an ordinance that would be adopted by the voters within the Cambria Community Services District. That is important because to undo the particular ordinance would require a similar vote or an action of equal dignity, and so it wouldn't be able to be undone by a future board for whatever reason they choose to do so. It would also look at situations and are hopefully allow for situations where if somebody wanted to annex open space or some desirable property that would not require any water use, that we would allow that. Frankly, the research is not complete, so that's why we're here, to be able to go off in that particular direction. And if you have any other requests of particular importance or concern that could be included in this particular draft ordinance, if it comes back for your consideration, I would be happy to receive that information now if that's the direction, or in the future.
Any questions of the district's council? Director Chalmacott?
Yeah, I think that this is very straightforward at the moment. I'm just wondering whether, you mentioned the state campgrounds, whether there should be allowance for some kind of public service. I can't think of one right now, but if there was a park and they needed a restroom and it was outside the town, we will want to vote of the people on that. I'm just...
The district can and has allowed outside utility user agreements. Camp Oceans Pines mm-hmm. is one of the most recent ones. And we could try to include some ability for the board on its own action to allow that type of use. Sometimes it's an emergency water use or something of that nature that wouldn't have to wait and go through the whole election process. Mm-hmm. That process is quite expensive.
Sure.
When it's done, even merged with a regular municipal election.
Yeah. And the other thing I was thinking was that it would be nice to state, for example, how many percentage the vote should be, whether it's a 60 or 50, you know, and actually have that in the ordinance so people really would know, you know, what the requirements are. And also whether it's residents or lot owners or both, you know, just so it's really clear and we don't have to argue about it later on.
And I think the only type of ordinance that could be enacted this way is with the registered voters, so that would be my recommendation. Mm-hmm. And I'll look into whether we can add a supermajority provision to it, that it can be only changed with some sort of percentage of majority.
I wasn't asking for I just wanted the definition within the body of the ordinance.
That would be good information to have, though.
Okay.
Yeah, because you know, this is going to come up in future years, I'm sure, that people will want to do that.
Right.
But I think that what I like is the simplicity of it is the attraction. Thank you.
Director Coben?
I think I'm a little slow. So the vote would be on passing the ordinance, or we'd pass an ordinance that say people had to vote.
I did sort of gloss over that the process would be that the board could start an initiative or place something on the ballot mm-hmm. for the voters of the district to vote on, and if passed, it would be enacted just like you adopt any other ordinance.
So,
special provision of it that it could only be changed with an equal vote at a future date. The board cannot undo it.
So if it is... If, say, that happened, then if somebody wanted to take one of these actions, that wouldn't require the vote after that.
Yes, the ordinance language itself, if adopted, would require another vote of the people to be able to extend water service to an annexed area.
So it would be a second vote. In order to make it pass in the first place, we need to vote. Okay.
Yeah, vote would be required to require another vote.
That's right. Any other questions of the district council? I have two requests to speak on this item. Wayne Ryburn.
Good afternoon. I'm Wayne Ryburn. I live in Cambria. I strongly support your proposal for the initiative, and I thank the two board members that introduced that, whoever they are, and the two others that seem to support it. There's precedence for this. and you may know this already, but I'll give it to you anyway. In the current plan that's being reviewed by the Planning Commission, this is found in Chapter 1, Number 4. They talk about hard edging or hard line. So that's there for you. The county staff supports it. The Planning Commission has reviewed it several weeks ago. They support it. And if you look clear back to 1998, the coastal to retire an equivalent legal building site located within the Cambria Urban Reserve line on a one-to-one basis. And then it goes on to give more specific language about how it would be recorded and retired and so forth. And to me, this is going to be, it looks like, in the county plan once it clears the Planning Commission. But history will tell you, when the Board of Supervisors looks at it and then it goes to the Planning Commission, it could take years for this to be in effect. So if you want to be proactive, I would suggest you do this yourself and not wait until 2010 and let the Board of Supervisors and the Coastal Commission lag this thing on forever. So maybe Art could consider that for you, and
absolutely,
when he gets back with the other item, he could tell you something about that too. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Wayne, very much. Rick Hawley.
Richard Hawley, resident of Cambria and also the executive director of Green Space, the Cambria Land Trust. And I'm very pleased to see this concept before the community. And I have a couple of documents that might help Mr. Martin Montandon. One of them is called the Guide to Local Growth Control Initiatives. It's put out by the Planning and Conservation League, which I'm a member of, a board member of. And there's another one called the Ballot Box Navigator, and where these documents are a year to 6 months old, they don't necessarily bring in SB 135, which gives the district expanded jurisdictions over different things. The point being is that I really like this concept, and it does give our community the potential of having a very hard urban line. At the most recent Green Space board meeting, my board directed me to explore this, but now I don't have to do it to the level that they wanted me to do this. But I want to open the door for having some citizen review on this to make sure that it meets some of the qualifications and so forth. That there may not be. What I want to do is make sure there's not a loophole in it. And I think maybe you might consider putting a 25-year limit on this, and so it can be reviewed again in the future. And then I guess it would come out to be the same way if people would. Could vote to undo it if they wanted to. But anyway, that's
Rick, I think this will get plenty of vetting, and your input is always welcome, as is the input of any of the residents and ratepayers in town.
Good. Thank you. Congratulations.
Thank you.
For moving forward on this.
Thank you. Steve Cole.
Steve Cole, Cambria. Does anyone, to begin with, remember the percentage of water used in San Simeon Campground, even just roughly, during their year or during our dry season, just very roughly even?
A lot.
That's pretty rough. Anyway, I just thought I remembered something like 30% or something absurd like that. Is that even possible?
I don't think it's 30%.
No, but it was quite a
bit. But I can tell you, based upon some research that Director Chaldicott and I did, that during the peak of the season, approximately 20,000 people a month go through the State Park Campground.
And
so you can extrapolate from that the amount of water that gets used.
Yeah. So my question then is there anything that's going to be done to help reduce that or to help restrict it or to help
encourage campers to use less, or even if water is used on the grounds to perhaps use reclaimed water? Is there anything that can be done to reduce the impact on the entire community?
We are soon going to be undertaking a rate study that will analyze the existing residential and commercial rates. And I, for one, have asked that our consultant consider a third tier of rates for motels, state park, campground, and so forth. Mm-hmm. And the idea is that conservation will be there when the price of water is significantly higher for them than it is now.
Of course, getting there, it'll be quite an impact on everyone until it gets to that point.
Right.
Is there a timeline when this development of this third tier might take place? For the adjacent parcel area across San Simeon Creek Road, wasn't that purchased already?
Yeah, the Molinari Ranch has been acquired by the state.
Yeah.
That's correct.
And will we have any control over that? As
as was indicated, state will have to come to us, and if they expect us to serve them, we'll have some very, I'm sure, difficult discussions.
Do we have control, or can they override us?
Well, I don't know that we're prepared to answer that today. We have a contract with the state that requires that we serve the existing state park campground. I don't think anybody has it memorized, so we'd have to do a little bit of research to figure out what our obligations are beyond the existing commitment. I'm assuming that we don't have a commitment beyond the existing state park campground, but we'll get an answer to that.
And one last thing, has the state park, or have we approached the state park regarding that area and asked them to try to implement anything on their own?
Yes,
any
have.
Conservation we have?
Absolutely.
Has it been successful?
From the reports back from Ben Bohr, he just did it a few months ago whenever Directors Chaldicott and Sanders had requested the information.
Yeah. Somewhat, but not as good as it should be, in our view.
Okay. Thank
okay.
you.
Thank you. Is there anybody else who would like to address the board on this item? Apparently not.
I was going to direct a question relevant to the speaker. It's a question to our utilities manager, who is busy right now. Are they is state parks using the Title 12 water that we're providing? Can we provide them for landscape and all that, other than drinking water, obviously?
They're not using our Title 22 water right now, but they do have their own well on site. Mm-hmm. That used to be their potable well, but I'm not exactly sure if they're actually using it for landscaping or not. It's mm-hmm. what they should be doing. Mm-hmm. But they're also, if they use over 10,000 gallons a day, they have to pay a premium. Same thing on their wastewater. If they're pushing over 10,000 gallons through their sewer system, they're obligated to pay a premium. So they try to keep it down below that.
But they're pumping out of the same aquifer then, but downstream from where our spray fields are.
Well, they may be in the Van Gordon. I'm not. It's probably San Simeon, but it's down below.
Uh-huh.
But they're not using it for potable water. And I'd have to reach way back, but we did some negotiations with them due to our spray field and our application site to take that well off of potable use. It was a pretty bad well anyway, high TDS and high nitrates and a lot of other things. So that's what part of the genesis was, to supply them with water in the first place. That and putting our outfall line and the district's water line through the that little minor wetland they have there.
So we need to monitor their expansion then pretty carefully.
We should. And, we'd be willing to share that water with them, too, as well. I mean, especially the reclaim,
yeah,
the Title 22.
Yeah.
And I might stress, if they're expanding, even the speaker said that he heard a rumor, because we don't know anything about any plans for expansion.
Yeah. Right.
Well, apparently they don't have the money to expand it right now.
Yeah. That's right. Any other questions of the staff? What's the pleasure of the board?
I think we direct staff to draft the ordinance 08-2005 to be enacted by a vote of the electorate of the CSD, and that it would require a vote of the electorate to extend the CCSD water service to proposed annexations.
And to bring that back to the board for consideration for placement on the ballot. Is there a second to the motion?
I'll second if it needs it.
It's been moved and seconded to direct staff to draft the ordinance and to bring it back to the board for consideration for placement on the ballot. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Item 9C is an item to receive the Parks, Recreation, and Open Space Commission report slash response to the CCSD Parks and Recreation Ad Hoc Committee report on appointment of PROS commissioners and approve the PROS commission appointment process. Is there a staff report?
There is. Thank you. I want to clarify two things before I start. First of all, in item 2D under recommendations, I have AB 135. I'm sorry, this is a Senate bill, not an Assembly bill, so that should be SB 135. This is the new law concerning community services districts that will be effective on January 1st of 2006. And then I might also response to the report. I tried to make it very simple for you to follow and summarize. Certainly, if either of you who were on the Board Ad Hoc Parks and Recreation Committee have any suggestions or any corrections, you might want to bring those up. And I also confer that directly to the PROS commissioners or Jim Elman when he gets up to make his presentation. When I was doing this report, it was difficult to decide how I was going to present the recommendations, I might add. I thought that I could present them in a way that allowed you, as the representatives of the constituency here in Cambria, to select from each one of these six elements, and or I could just make recommendations based on my experience in the past few years that I've been working with the district and the PROS Commission and the Parks and Recreation issues, and that is finally what I decided to do. After I finished the report, I thought that I would take all of the recommendations and the two reports and make these recommendations. That certainly doesn't mean that you have to agree with them or and or change your mind and or come up with new ones. There is certainly in every one of these categories other options for you to consider, so I just want to make sure that you are aware or realize that there are other alternatives you might come up with after you hear the presentation. Just for the public's information, of course, Chairman Jim Elman will receive or present the PROS Commission report or response to the District Board's Parks and Recreation Ad Hoc Committee report. And then as part two of my recommendation, I saw as the commission appointment process the six elements. One dealt with what exactly would be the appointment process for the PROS commissioners. You might remember a couple of years ago when we had the workshop between the PROS commissioner and this board. It was open to the public. There were some issues that were brought up with how PROS commissioners would be appointed in the future. The ordinance that currently is on the books that we had distributed to you does allow this board to nominate and appoint those commissioners. So both groups have made what they think are their recommendations to this, and you will hear from the PROS commission when he speaks. The second element was how many PROS commissioners should there be? There are currently 10, and one group, the ad hoc committee, your colleagues recommended 5, and then the PROS commissioners are recommending that it remain at 10 members. The next element was the term. I recommended that it be remaining at 4 years. Your ad hoc committee recommends 2 years with a subsequent 2-year appointment if they wish to continue in the position. Item D, or the fourth element, was the effective date. Art will address that when he talks about the Senate Bill 135, but I'm recommending the January 1st, 2006 date because it somewhat relates to the this action for the Senate Bill 135. The fifth element is the PROS Commission role. There was some discussion in both reports with regard to how the PROS Commission should report. And the ad hoc committee suggested that maybe they serve in a capacity of an advisory committee to the Parks and Recreation Department. And then, of course, the department head reports to me as general manager, and then it could move up to the board. The PROS Commission is recommending that it continue as an advisory committee directly to the board of directors, and that's the recommendation that I'm asking to be moved forward. And the final element is the PROS Commission meetings. Right now, the PROS commissioners meet once a month. And the ad hoc committee recommended quarterly meetings with a greater frequency based on what might be required. I agreed with that. The PROS commissioners want to retain the monthly meetings, and the reason is not necessarily just any burdens that might be placed on staff, but I just might add that because we have moved forward as a staff with regard to parks and recreation issues, there may not be a need to meet monthly anymore. We are working on projects that relate to parks and recreation, not just solely recreation or not just solely parks, and open space, of course, and we're handling those. If there was a need or an issue came up that the PROS commissioners needed to deal with, then, of course, a meeting would be called, and we can determine that between the general manager and the chairman of the board, or the PROS commission, I'm sorry. So those were the elements. I'm certainly... we're open as a staff. If you see after you hear PROS Commission Chairman Jim Ellman's report that there may be others that I may have missed, but I'm going to turn it over now to District Counsel Art Montana to give his little background discussion on the Senate Bill 135 and how it might impact your action today.
Excuse me a minute, Tammy. I think you didn't mention the appointment process.
I apologize. I didn't explain
that. That was one of the agenda items.
Yeah. The appointment process that I'm recommending being moved forward is that the PROS chairman inform the department manager, which at this time, since there's no full-time department manager, it falls to me as general manager, of a pending vacancy on the PROS commission, and that the staff will implement the standard advertising procedure, which is a one-page application soliciting interest in those who would like to serve as a PROS commissioner. And then we have a deadline. We advertise in the local papers. And then that the district ad hoc parks and recreation committee review those applications and then recommend what qualified candidates to the board of directors for nomination and appointment. And then Art added this code section 7.08.
Be one of the functions. It didn't give any direction on how it could be implemented and how it should be implemented. But what the bill did, which is what it does in a lot of sections, it incorporates a procedure and authority set forth in another section of the statutes. And here the bill states that the CSD's function regarding parks and recreation should follow the authority of the Recreation and Park District Law, which is in the Public Resources Code. And in looking in that code, which is also another fairly large provision regarding that district, it talks about how governing entities can provide for parks and recreation commissions. That particular section says that if that type of commission is created, that it should require 5 members. Now, that is my interpretation of that is if any governing board, including a CSD, decides to have a Parks and Recreation Commission, which is not required, but if they do decide to do it, that it, the maximum and minimum number of members is 5.
So what you're saying then, Art, is that SB 135 put some constraints on us in terms of the total number of members, of the PROS Commission.
That's correct.
Okay.
And last, before you call up Chairman Jim Ellman, I should have noted in here that whatever process gets approved today, we will bring back an amended ordinance for the PROS Commission, because I gave you as it reads today. Right. If you make any changes to that, then we will bring back an amended ordinance for your consideration next month.
Understood.
Could I clarify?
Yes, Director Chaldeca.
The date of January the 1st has been your recommended day for appointment to new commissioners. Does that dovetail in with SB 135?
It does.
Okay.
Terrific. Jim, you're on.
Mr. President and members of the board, thank you for giving me the opportunity to meet with you today on agenda item 9C. I learned this morning from the general manager that I should focus my attention on that portion of the PROS Commission response to the Parks and Recreation Ad Hoc Committee report that deals with the PROS Commission. So before I do that, let me just give you just a little bit of background, if I could. You will recall that on July 28th, your board requested that the PROS Commission review the Parks and Recreation Ad Hoc Committee report, and so we met on August 10th. We established subcommittees, and then on September 7th, we met again, and we finalized the report, and that's the report that's before you today, the September 8th report. It is important for you to note that the PROS Commission is a very cohesive group, and it's a strong group of volunteers. We've been involved in a wide range of activities, including the lot transfer program, Crosstown Trail, the community center, the dog park, and a whole host of issues. And by the way, we are anxious to participate in that, as I indicated at the town meeting last week, in the build-out program. Well, I'm really looking forward to that. Secondly, it's been PROS' effort to be very supportive of this board and at the same time look out for what we think is in the best interest of the community. And I think we've accomplished that without having any real great controversy or embarrassment to your board. So, with respect to those recommendations in the ad hoc committee report, let me just summarize the PROS' position. The first recommendation is to suspend PROS meetings and until such time that a new commissioner can be appointed. And we think that this is counterproductive and that we currently have an environment where the community has a friendly forum, although we work under the Brown Act and we have these public meetings. It's rather an informal process, and the community can come speak with us on issues, and we're therefore a buffer between you and the community, and we in fact reduce the potential for work on the district because these individuals come meet with us. And I'm talking about, like, for example, the lawn bowlers, the dog park people, a whole host of you, the skateboard people. So we would oppose any plan to suspend meetings. They propose quarterly meetings, and as I have indicated for some time, this is workable. If you want to have quarterly meetings, it sure would be easier on me. But the problem is that we think the standard should be monthly meetings because we've only canceled, I think, in the last few years, maybe two or three meetings. And it's because we always have something to cover at these meetings. And some meetings are more productive than others. But with respect to... reporting to who does the Parks and Recreation Open Space Commission report to, we think it is very, very important that it continue to report to this board as your advisors and not to as some committee that would report to the Parks and Recreation Director. And we think that this is important that these meetings are in fact in a public forum. And quite frankly, now that we are fully operating under the Brown Act, the commissioners feel that this has been in the best interest of the district and the community. And we have an agenda to work from, and the community knows when they can meet on particular topics and when our committees can present various issues. With respect to the term, our commission has always felt that it should be four, but we're not strongly opposed to that. If your board wanted to make the commissioner's term be 2 years, that's fine, but you have to realize if you do that, you're going to probably be in an ongoing recruitment appointment process as vacancies occur. We think four is more workable. It's worked very well. And let me just give you the current situation of the commission. As you know, the current ordinance, we have 10 commissioner positions. We have three vacant positions at this time. We have three commissioners whose terms have expired, so they're no longer, they've fulfilled their term, but they're still serving at the pleasure of the board. And then we have two commissioners, myself and Commissioner Breglio, who are in our second term, and I think we're probably in the seventh year or something like that. And then we have two commissioners whose terms expire within the next year or two. So the reason I'm bringing this up is that if, in fact, the commission can only have five commissioners as a result of SB 135 and this resource code provision, then it would seem that we're going to have to deal with these commissioners who are serving the extended terms as well as those commissioners whose terms have expired. So there's many ways of looking at this. You could look at this as though we have one vacancy, or you could look at this as that we have many more vacancies because of those persons who are serving extended terms. The reason I'm bringing this up, I think it's important that you grandfather those commissioners who are currently serving legitimate terms, full terms have been appointed by your commission, by your board, that they continue to serve. With respect to the other three, and some of them may apply, then, of course, they could reapply for a reappointment, providing that wasn't precluded by ordinance. Now, with respect to the general manager's report, if I may just briefly respond to that, if I could. The appointment process is fine with us. Now, this appointment process was not cleared with the commission, but I'm assuming I think the sound went out. Sound go out? Yeah? Oh, okay. That the appointment process has not been presented to the commission, but in looking at it, I see it as very workable. And the reason I say it's very workable is because the commission could still give input if they wanted, as well as the community. It doesn't preclude the parties from presenting information. So I see this as being very workable. I don't know who the ad hoc committee would be, but I would assume that would include some of the directors. And so I would support that. With respect to the number of commissioners, I've already indicated that it appears this is a moot point now, and so it appears that we may be in a situation where there's only five. The concept of four-year term, that's supports our position of the board. Of course, the effective date is set forth by law in SB 135. And reporting to the Board of Directors, this is consistent with the PROS Commission recommendation. And then lastly, quarterly meetings, as I've indicated, we think the standard should be monthly. But if you want it to be quarterly, meet at least quarterly. That's, of course, workable because we could still have monthly meetings. But you need to be aware of the fact that what will most likely happen, I've seen this happen before, it will shift to quarterly meetings.
Shift to monthly meetings, you mean?
No. If you put a provision in that meetings shall be at least quarterly, my expectation is down the road meetings will be quarterly rather than monthly.
I see. Okay.
And if you have any questions, I'm open for questions.
Any questions of Jim Ellman? Thank you, Jim, very much, and thank you for your dedicated service.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. What is the pleasure of the board? Director Coben.
I have a friend who thinks the same way I think, so we'll bring them in, and then pretty soon we have the majority, or we maintain the majority. So any mechanism that would outlaw that so that you would have that broad representation, and I don't think letting them appoint their own people would do that. On the number, I think five isn't enough. It kind of echoes the Board of Supervisors and the Planning Commission. You need 10. And alternates just give you the excuse not to attend a meeting. So in my mind, it should be 10 people who are qualified and willing to attend the meetings. And then finally, if you try quarterly meetings, you'll have no continuity. You need at least a monthly meeting. And, you know, if you can't have a meeting, you could cancel it or schedule a special one. But to do it every 3 months, you'll have no continuity in terms of what you're trying to study or the work you're trying to get done. So thank you for listening to me.
Thank you, Wayne. Bill Warren, did you wish to speak?
I'm Bill Warren. I've been a resident going on 18 years in Cambria now. I wasn't going to speak to this either, but I will now. I'm not a member of PROS, but for the last few years I've attended every PROS meeting that I've been in town, so I know how they operate and I know what they've accomplished. And I'd have three fairly strong suggestions. One is you're a lot better off to have 10 members than five because you get a broader representation from the community. Just look at the North Coast Advisory Council. They have 12 people because that's a lot broader than having, say, five. So that's one suggestion. The second is I think you're a lot better off having monthly meetings than every quarter. That's just not enough in my estimation, as long as you've got issues to study. And the third thing, I think the commission is a lot better off reporting directly to you folks than through a parks commissioner. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. Yes, Joellen Butler.
I would just like to say, I'm Joellen Butler. I'm a 35-year resident of Cambria, and the PROS Commission has done a wonderful job in the time I've been here. The only thing I'd like to say is I would like to see the members of the PROS Commission who have continuing terms go over to start the new commission and have terms that are you don't call them overlapping, but so that part of a commission, the commission is appointed 1 year and part the next year and part the following
year.
Staggered terms, because the experience of this commission could carry over to the new members who are coming in, and then it would be perpetuated that way. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Jim Ellman, you stood up and wanted to...
I just wanted to make one point of clarification that I failed to mention, because I've said this before so many times. The commission's position with respect to how you appoint these commissioners, we think should be totally up to the board. In fact, our position is we do not want to be a part of that selection process. That's not to say we might not want to give our input based on individuals, but we really think that this is a process that should reflect the total community, and the selection should come from the board. How you go about doing that, it could be on a rotation basis. There's a wide range of methods that are employed by public agencies in terms of selection of commissioners. So I just wanted to clarify that if I gave the impression that we want to be in part of that process, we certainly don't. We want to leave that totally up to you.
Great. Thank you, Jim. Is there anybody else who would like to address the board on this issue? Apparently not. What is the pleasure of the board?
I would like to make some opening comments.
Director Coben.
Having chaired the ad hoc committee. The first thing to say is that every member of the committee or all the committee members were either members of PROS or have been members, or we were represented to PROS. For instance, Peter Chaldicott has been 8 or 12 years, I think, as the CCSD representative. I was a member of the PROS Commission for 8 years, and I'm now one of the district appointees to it. So our intent in this report was to strengthen the PROS Commission and to make it more useful or more helpful to the newly emerging Department of Parks and Recreation. So that is the goal. And for instance, when we said quarterly, what we were saying to them is you must meet quarterly, at least quarterly. We're saying you cannot just say we'll meet once a year. If people want to say you meet every month, if you made another column for the county, you would say that their appointment process is that each individual supervisor appoints whoever they choose. There are no criteria, just that the one supervisor would appoint them. There are 5 members, one for each supervisor. The term of the member is coterminous with the supervisor. So, for instance, one of the members has been on for 14 years because the supervisor has been that long. In terms of the role, Jan told me that the PROS Commission at the county level actually does make some independent actions. So if a park district came to them and wanted to do something, they could act on it and carry through with it. So that's much different than anything we've ever had, and I'm not sure we want to adopt that. But they do have the authority to take some independent actions. And in terms of who they report to, the Parks and Recreation Department head is the secretary of the organization and staffs the PROS Commission. they don't have any standing committees. They work as a whole, but they may appoint standing committees when they wish to. So that's the way. And it's a very influential group. If you haven't had time to attend a meeting or to look at the work they do, they work very hard, and they're very important to our community that they operate. So I just thought that it put that into context of what they're doing. In terms of the committee's report, we were trying to acknowledge that we do have a Parks and Recreation Department, and that we wanted the PROS Commission to work within the context of the department. We have staff members that are now doing things that, for instance, Connie Davidson does the grant writing and project management whenever there is a Parks and Recreation project. Ben Bohr is the facilities person, manages and takes care of a lot of our open space properties. So all we were trying to do was make it a leaner, efficient organization and introduce the fact that there's staff now to do the work. The 8 years that I served on it, I was the sole recreation person in the community. There wasn't any staff. There wasn't any other commissioner that was interested in that particular role. And so I worked and forwarded, and I did a lot of things. We think now that isn't necessary to have a commissioner join the board and work in that particular way, because there is staff that actually comes to the meetings and supports the work of him. So I don't know, Peter may have some other things to add about the point of the report, but point of our committee, but was what we were after, what we wanted us to do.
Dr. Chalukat, anything you'd like to add?
Yes. There were the PROS gave their additional concerns. I didn't really agree with their findings that it would reduce public involvement. I didn't feel that was applicable at all. It certainly wasn't our intention. And number two, conduct meetings as ad hoc and avoid the Brown Act. That certainly wasn't anything to do with what we wanted. So
no.
I thought those two conclusions were wrong as far as we're concerned. Well, I was going to add, as far as the five members, I wondered if we were to have five alternates, well, that would be, acceptable or not.
You could have alternates without violating the law. You could have ex officio members, yeah, which are members but are non-voting, however you want to compose it.
Yeah. Okay. It's certainly some. I saw the value of having the five plus five. If anyone else did, I would support it. The rest of the recommendations from Tammy, I go along with.
Excuse me.
Director Coleman.
One more thing. I was looking at the role of the county, and the way they state it is that the commission advises the supervisors but works through the department. And I think that's really what we're trying to say, the advice, but in terms of working with, we were just trying to give them an avenue to work with the department instead of having to come directly to the board every time they needed something, or they want to make a change, or they wanted to pursue a certain avenue. So I think that's, again, the way the county one works, is that their role is to advise the supervisors, but in terms of getting their work accomplished, it's to work with the department. So I guess with that, I would hope that we support the work of the ad hoc committee.
Appointments, whether it's on PROS or whether it's on any other commission that we may have, that if you don't wait until you have a vacancy, you know, the opportunity that, you know, to for people that are interested in an appointment is, for example, for PROS, it should be an ongoing process. They can come into the district office, fill out a standard form, and you would therefore have a body of potential replacements who are willing to come forward and volunteer, so that you don't just simply have to, fill a vacancy by under kind of a, you know, just rushing out and finding out people. If they keep their names available over a long period of time, it certainly, I think, would indicate that they are probably very committed to working on it. That's the only issue. It's not an issue, but I think it would be in doing rather than just advertising when there's a vacancy, make that an opportunity that's available anytime somebody wants to volunteer to serve on a particular committee. Then you have a hopefully you have a reservoir of people already expressing their interest and willing to come in.
I think that's a wonderful idea, and that's the way to go.
Well, this, coincidentally, my first. The first time I ever served on a community service area, it was the Parks and Recreation Department, and that was out of the fact that I had some children that were about ready to, they were in the area where they needed a recreation department, it seems to me that. Jim Illman certainly seems to find that the bulk of this recommendation is acceptable. But for those that and I had some time, I served some time on the PROS Commission also, and I just thought that if they felt that the quarterly meetings was a constraint, I think you've rather clarified that this. I think that if they have the the permission or the option, if they feel like they want to work on, if they need to have a meeting, they could have ongoing committees of members of the PROS Commission that are working on individual goals or projects. And when they get to the point where they want to have input and review and recommendation to the total commission, they could just, as it says, based upon need. So it doesn't have to be explicitly a requirement that they only meet on a quarterly basis. If that's clear, I think that would probably satisfy what some of the concerns were of the PROS Commission. And as to trying to find balance in a community this small that serves all the different special, not special group, but the different perspectives in life. For example, you won't have any trouble in finding people over 50. But you might have some problems finding somebody that's under 50, because they're, unless they are not working or something like this, it's difficult for them to put in that. So if you make that a specific, you have to have a slot for some for the aged, the slot for those that are in just whatever type of spectrum you're trying to fill. I don't think that's too practical in a small community like this. That's the only observations I have.
I have a couple of comments. I think in the main I can support the recommended action, but I'd like to propose a couple of amendments. First of all, with respect to the appointment process, I want to make sure that no board member is encumbered from looking at all of the applications that come in. I appreciate that there has to be some sort of a process, and I think it's a good idea for two board members that constitute the ad hoc committee screen those applications, but I think a board member may want to look at all of them. As a flack catcher, it's a great book, by the way. And really does serve as a buffer in a much more informal kind of setting where those matters that are under PROS jurisdiction can be really aired out and fleshed out and
ideas can be generated and germinated and so forth. And I like that. I think it's healthy. I think it's open. I think the residents of Cambria have come to expect that. The way the present ordinance reads, meetings are to be monthly if necessary. So it's not as if we're requiring that PROs meet every month, but there is the impetus there, I think, to meet monthly. And as we go forward with build-out reduction, I firmly believe that PROs is going to have more work than it ever imagined. I think we need to get PROs involved in helping to fashion the financing plan for build-out reduction. We need to get PROs involved in the ongoing operation and maintenance of all of the open space that the district is going to be acquiring. We need PROs to help us maximize those resources. Where are pocket parks appropriate? How are we going to fund them? What kind of amenities are they going to have? What kind of facilities should they have? So on. It's a gargantuan job. And I think that PROs ought to be an integral part of fleshing all of that out and making sense of it. Finally, I understand that we're hamstrung with SB 135. We can have no more than five members. My suggestion is that we get the new PROs commission appointed, get it started, and that we let the commission come back to us with a recommendation on whether there ought to be ex officio members or alternates. They will have a grasp of the workload, and I think they'd be much better equipped at making a recommendation than the five of us sitting here trying to impose something on them. Also, just one final thought. I think it's important that there be some continuity. I think it would be unfair to start a new commission in January cold without having any institutional memory. I don't think we have to necessarily make the decision today that the two members whose terms have not expired will carry over. But when we make the appointments to the commission, we can keep that in mind. And if it's the will of the board, we can put those two present serving commissioners on the new commission and appoint three others to flesh it out. I can support the recommended action with those slight amendments.
I have a. Do you think that we should go as to the old scheme of having directors appoint individual members? I just float it. I don't necessarily think we should.
No, I think for the reasons Don gave that. As a member of PROS, we found that very dissatisfactory. Mm-hmm. To do that, instead of looking for people that were vetted because of their interest or their knowledge or skill in that area.
Okay.
I like that. I think that's healthy to have a process like that.
And I like Don's notion of, and I think PROS has already done this, is that bringing other members of the community in, and again, the county does that too. You could. One of the commissioners has to be on the committee, but you can have a myriad of other folks in the community join for any special subcommittee that's been appointed. So I too, would support all of what the general manager has proposed, including the four-year term, if that's the pleasure of everybody. But there are two things I'd like to, where it says report and that issue of who it reports to, I'd like to use the language they use in the county, and that's advise. Instead of report to the board, advise the board, and then work with the department or something like that, and that the department provides the staff to the commission. And then the second thing is we haven't talked about at all is that if you have a term of 4 years, is there a possible reappointment for another four, or does that end?
Yeah, I'm not a believer in term limits myself. I think if somebody is qualified and doing a good job, that they ought to be eligible for reappointment.
And I
look at how successful it is in our